Hey, this is Michael Hutchinson, and you're listening to the Front Row Podcast.
Welcome back to the Front Row Podcast. I have a new guest. Welcome to the Front Row Podcast, Jared.
Hey, Donald. Thanks for having me on.
So we met between 15 to 20 years ago.
Yes, it has been roughly, I don't know exactly what year we met, but somewhere in the last 15 to 20 years when I was playing volleyball and coaching volleyball at Westwood, and you were working with the volleyball and basketball teams at John Taylor.
Yeah. So, yeah, we crossed paths many times through those years.
So. Yes, absolutely. You were one of the best managers in the whole province back then. I remember always working with all the teams and always super helpful and involved on the bench, and it was great to see you involved back then.
Yeah, so, yeah, it was great back then, you know. You have a lot of great teams and stuff like that.
Yeah, Westwood and John Taylor had a good rivalry, like we were saying, how both from St. James, you're kind of from the same part of the city, but Westwood and Crestview, different sides of Portage Avenue, you had a good little rivalry between the two schools, and had some competitive matches over the years, whether it be in regular season or in playoffs. And John Taylor was, they're always one of the schools that you didn't want to lose to when you were at Westwood, and I'm sure vice versa.
Yeah, so yeah, it goes back and forth. So like we have like always beat you, and then you beat us back and forth, and.
Yeah, that's what makes a good rivalry, right? I think nobody wants to be part of a rivalry if you never win or you never lose. Yeah. To me, you got to be able to have a couple wins every once in a while against each other. And with what Silver Heights back then, now obviously it's Sturgeon Heights, and those St. James involved in there as well. But it was a good conference back then, and you get the Charleswood schools with Oak Park and Shaftesbury and St. Paul's, and it was always a super competitive conference on the volleyball side of things, and then lots of great teams for basketball too. And always, I wasn't a basketball guy, but on the volleyball side of things, always had some good matches.
As one of the former teammates there, he was there in like grade 9 year, and he posted a volleyball game between JT and Old Park. And I was like, oh man, that's so long ago. Like with Andy Mead as a coach. And I was like, oh man, like
which player was that?
Scott Stevenson.
Oh yeah, Scott Stevenson, yeah. He was a setter.
Yeah. And posted it on YouTube. I'm not sure it's still there or not, but it took me back to like 2002 school year, so.
Like I said, 20 years ago. I had a lot more hair on my head back then and a lot less hair on my face. I was much, much better looking 20 years ago than I am now, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. As, so, are you coming up to Team Canada in BC?
Yeah, so I'm very excited. I was named to the coaching staff for the Canadian Youth National Team. So these are the best, basically, high school age players in the whole country. And we selected 30 guys from across Canada. And I think almost every province is represented. We're missing a couple kind of on the East Coast. But we have 6 guys from Manitoba who are on the team. And 5 of them play for our volleyball club here in Winnipeg. So that's really exciting. And I was one of 6 coaches who was named to the staff. And almost the entire staff, they're all head coaches. There's one assistant coach from UBC, but the rest are all, the other 4 guys are head coaches of university programs, and then myself as a club coach. So it's a really, it's a tremendous honor to be selected to that staff. And then it's an opportunity to work with some great athletes, but also to learn from some amazing coaches. So it's the 4th time I've been part of the program. Last summer, it was entirely virtual. So with COVID-19, we had to do everything over Zoom and kind of had different meetings with the guys and instructions just through everything being online. But now we're actually going to get to train in person. So I leave for Vancouver on July 15th, and I'll be there till August 5th. So it'll be a great experience.
So, and you do a local thing with 204?
That's correct, yeah. So we have a boys volleyball club here in Winnipeg called 204 Volleyball Club. And this was our 12th year. We started back in 2010. So I was with the U of M for 5 years. I was the assistant coach for the University of Manitoba with the men's team there. And then I was also involved with the volleyball club there, so Bison Volleyball Club. And I did that for 6 seasons. And after 2009, another guy, Dan Gilbert, who actually helped out a little bit of John Taylor. It'd be after your time, but he helped out with Ryan Vermette. I don't know if you know that name, John Taylor. Those guys were a little bit after you would have been there.
Yeah.
But so Dan was a really good coach, and he was with at U of M when I was there as well. And we decided to start our own club. So way back when, we kind of got a group of guys together, and it's been rolling ever since. So that's kind of what keeps me going in the volleyball side of things. That's kind of my connection to the high level volleyball, and I've done some high school coaching over the last few years here too, but for the most part everything is on the club volleyball side. And this year we were able to practice for about a month and a half or so. We kind of got that window where things were allowed, and then we got shut down again, so it was tough for the guys, but really excited to get onto the court this summer in Vancouver.
Yeah, hopefully things get back on track and we can do things more.
Yeah, we want things to get back on track. We're hoping that we can get into a situation where by maybe the end of August here in Winnipeg, we can have a bit more regular volleyball. But right now with the rules, there can only be 5 players on a court at one time, and completely understand why, right? Want everybody to be safe, and don't want anybody getting sick, and want to make sure that it can be in a way that's beneficial to the athletes and they can get something out of it on the volleyball side, but also that it's not going to be a risk to them because these are just younger athletes and they have limited opportunities to get some of the vaccinations. And, you don't want anybody to be put at risk when they're going to play volleyball.
Yeah, so that's the tricky part, right? So,
yeah, I mean, I think everybody wants to get back and everybody wants to be participating the best that they can, and they miss with not just volleyball, but all their favorite sports. But you want to make sure that, it's not going to be a risk to the entire community, because obviously all these athletes, they go back home and they see their family. And if they're going to a volleyball gym where they're seeing multiple different people every single day and then bringing that back into their household, it just, it could be what they call kind of a super spreader, right? If you have a big gym where there's tournaments and lots of different teams all participating through there. I mean, from your time in volleyball, how long those days can be, right? When you're in the gym and there's teams going everywhere and you want to make sure that you keep those things limited.
Yeah, especially like tournaments, right? So you have from 8 plus teams in your tournament, right? 8, 16, or 32, however your size of your tournament is, right? So sometimes it's like, it's just guys' tournament, or sometimes it's just girls, or it's combined, and it's hard to control everything, right?
Oh, absolutely. When we go to club volleyball nationals, it would blow everybody away the amount of teams and courts there are that are participating at one time. If you've never been, it's hard to imagine. But we go to these giant convention centers where they have 30, 40, 50 courts all set up in one building. And, there's upwards of 1,000 teams competing at one time, and everybody's kind of rotating through. And if you think about if there's 12 players on every team and there's 1,000 teams and there's coaches and parents and friends and fans and everybody who comes out to watch, I mean, these events are massive undertakings, which is why we weren't able to do that this year, right? Everything this year was just training all across the country. And the hope is by next spring, we get into next May, which is when nationals normally happen, that we'll be able to get back into something like we've seen in the past. We're hopeful for that.
I know at John Taylor, they can divide that one gym into two gyms, and they has that third gym. And yep. So something like that, like other complexes, like I think U of W, they can do the same thing, divide their gyms into like 2 and or 3 or 4. So, and I can't remember.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Yeah. They basically have, kind of in the return to play guidelines that a lot of the sports are having. That's kind of what they're saying, right? If you're in a gym where you can put a curtain down and kind of keep people from interacting with each other, then you can have a few more people in the gym. If it's all just one big giant space, then there's less people who can be there. And, there's a lot of really smart people who are involved in in making those decisions. And, you know, us as coaches, we just want to make sure that we're delivering those programs the way that those people see fit, right? And that's people nationally and provincially and locally who are kind of all coming together and sharing the research and the science and making sure that we can have a safe return back to the court.
Yeah, so, yeah, I did a lot of, like, Piper Classics for tournaments for volleyball, basketball. It's one big thing, and, like, you're trying to coordinate things with parents and teams and, right? So then Westwood did the same thing. They have their tournaments, and then you go over to, like, MBCI. They have their tournaments. St. Paul. Like, every school has their own tournaments going on, right?
Yeah, those are some of the great traditions for high school sports are those weekend tournaments, and they happen in, like you mentioned, volleyball, basketball, hockey, you know, badminton, soccer. I mean, pretty much every single sport other than, you know, football is kind of hard to have a tournament, right? Because you can't play so many games back to back. But everything else is in a situation where those are great ways to fundraise for your school, you know, whether it be through running a canteen or, you know, kind of having your student council involved, and they can fund a lot of, whether it be maybe buying new jerseys for your school, right? Or, you know, buying some new equipment for the phys ed classes or whatever it may be. And they're just a lot of fun, right? You get the school all involved and you get some fans coming out. Maybe you have that opportunity to run a game at like 3 o'clock or 3:30 and you get all the students come out, get it let out a little bit early, maybe to come cheer the home school on. And those are always a blast for high school students. And I think it's something that they remember. They take with them after they leave the school is playing in those things, especially if it's going to be at their home school.
Yeah, and it's like I never heard of team handball until I got into JT, and like, and that guy asked like, "Hey, you want to come help with the team handball?" I was like, "Okay," and then I just said yes to see what it's like, and like it's a huge sport internationally. It's like, okay, and when I got looked into it more, and like, man, like it's huge. Like volleyball and like almost every single sport is like huge in some countries, but not so much in other countries, right? So.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, team handball, especially in Europe. I know I've had a few friends who've gone over to Europe to play professional volleyball and coach professional volleyball, and some of the cities they've been in, that's kind of one of the fun things they'll do on their time off is they'll go watch the pro team handball. And it's amazing. People, it's a really cool sport. It's a super athletic sport. And it kind of combines, you know, you think the principles of a few different sports, like the aspects and the rules of it. But for whatever reason, it just never, you know, really became a huge sport in Canada. I'm not sure why that is. I've played it in phys ed class and whatnot, and there are some schools that do the team handball stuff, but it's not as big as, say, a volleyball or a basketball. But it's really cool. I mean, you got to be a good athlete to play team handball. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, it's like, it's one of those sports, like, okay, and then, yeah, it's like, you ever go, yeah, to Europe, like, it's huge over there, apparently, and, like, I have done helping that with since my grade 11 year, so that's like 04. So, So luckily enough, I went to professional championships with handball.
Nice. So, how many championships did you win when you were at John Taylor? You must have racked up a couple.
Like professional wise, just two.
Okay.
And then there's like tournament wins in there too, and then. Like got third place in division with volleyball, different tournaments like St. James for basketball. Then the different ones, yeah, just like maybe a handful of tournaments I won in two provincials.
Yeah, that's something that you know, you can always kind of look back on it. It's cool if you go back into the school and you see the banner hanging, you know, kind of from the rafters of a team that you're involved in. I know that's always, you know, those things hopefully are there forever. Hopefully they take them down from the schools, right? But it's cool. And you can kind of see the guys that you won with, and you can always remember those moments where you were part of a championship team.
Yeah, so, yeah, they're remodeling JT now. They're adding on, like, fixing it up and adding floors to it right now, so.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So when that was when it's all done, I don't mind going back there and seeing the different awards people got. And
yeah, like I said, you were that manager of the year. That's something that's really cool that, you know, people can always look back on and see your name there, and that's something to be proud of.
Yeah, that's back in 2003, my second year, like student manager of the year. So
yeah, that was awesome. Was it the Morris Glimcher Award? Is that what it was called?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
So, yes, I was surprised I got that award and back then. So, never knew they had some kind of award like that.
Yeah, I think that, if I recall correctly, was kind of a newer award at the time. Like, I think they had kind of just started handing it out around that time. And you're one of the first recipients, I think, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I think it was, when I looked it up, I think they had a couple people before me, so.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And I wouldn't mind getting back into, like, helping with volleyball, basketball. Go back to the roots, you know.
Yeah, that'd be great. Once everything's done with all these COVID restrictions and we get back to competing against different schools, I'm sure any team would be happy to have you as a team manager. That'd be awesome.
Yes, I think Mr. Pennington, I think volleyball coach still there at Westwood. And I think JJ Ross is at school division.
Yeah, JJ Ross is at the school division. Yeah, he's no longer at Westwood. So he kind of came to Westwood. I think it was my grade 11 or 12 year, kind of right near the end of being at Westwood. And he had a ton of success on the girls' side, the varsity girls, for years at Westwood. Were always one of the best teams in the province. And he was leading them through all that and had a whole whack of girls who ended up going on to play university volleyball and then some who played even professionally overseas in Europe. And, you know, Rachel Cockrell, she was one of the better girls there. She won a national championship at the University of Manitoba and then was involved with Team Canada Beach. And she played for JJ for a few years at Westwood. So, yeah, he was always super engaged. And he's a basketball guy kind of by trade, I think, was more of a basketball coach and then got into volleyball and had a really good run of years there at Westwood with the varsity girls.
Yeah, that's how I met him. We always called each other Mr. Ross because we have the same last name.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, so. And I know his brother-in-law, Rob Schoffel. He's a good basketball guy, too.
Oh, yeah, he's a JT basketball guy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember him, yep.
So, and then he said you coached Keith Getz's son.
Yeah, so both Keith and Kevin, the two identical twins, both went to John Taylor and kind of have been teaching at different schools throughout the city. But Keith's son, Aiden, he plays in our volleyball club, so he's 16, and he's one of the better 16-year-olds in all of Manitoba. And then Kevin's son, Carter, he's only 13, so he's a little bit younger. But, yeah, they're both really good athletes, and, I mean, their dad's... Not too often do you get identical twins to begin with, right? And then you've got these two identical twins who are great athletes as well. And they had a nice dynasty of a few good teams at John Taylor. And then they both went on to play volleyball at U of M as well. And yeah, it's two good guys to have as dads in our volleyball club. They know a lot about the sport and have passed on some great genes to their children.
Yeah, and... I hear stories how, like, people only know Keith, and then they see Kevin in somewhere, and it's like, they start talking to him, and Kevin just gets, funny how it's like, yeah, I'm not.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. So one of our main coaches, one of my good friends at our volleyball club at 204 is Dan Lothar, and Dan and his twin brother, Nick Lothar, they went to CJS, and they were both really successful in basketball and volleyball at John Sauvay. And then Nick ended up playing basketball at U of W and Dan played volleyball. But it's amazing. It happens to them all the time. And they're both teachers at two different schools. So they have students who will approach them all the time thinking they're the other teacher, the other brother, and they don't know the other one exists, right? So they don't even believe them when they say, like, no, I'm not Nick. I'm Dan. Nick's my identical twin brother. And they think that they're pulling a prank on them, right? So yeah. A lot of times, I think when you're in that situation, you just end up saying hi anyways and don't bother explaining because it's too much too much hassle and confusion to try to explain to people that you're actually a different person.
So yeah, I'm Matt Kevin too. So like, I know they're definitely. And so one day I saw Kevin. I was like, hey, Mr. Guest, how's it going? He's like, he kind of looks at me. I think he forgot that he met me. It's like,
yeah.
Like he goes like, you know who I am? Like, yeah, you're Kevin. He goes like, okay. I only met him like the once because he filled in for Keith at volleyball one time, and like,
okay,
that's how I got to know him. And like,
that's great. That's good stuff.
Yeah. So thanks for coming on.
Yeah, no problem. Did you have you been keeping up on your wrestling stuff?
Oh yeah, and yes. Right, yes, keeping it up on recently. I haven't watched you right now because I've been busy, and I went to WrestleMania 32 in Dallas. There, it was pretty good.
Yeah, I wanted to go to that one. I went to WrestleMania 30 in New Orleans with some good friends, and that was a blast. We had a great time. That was the Undertaker's first loss. Brock Lesnar beat him, and the entire Superdome, all like 65 or 70,000 people were in shock. And we had a really fun experience. I mean, just being in New Orleans was a blast. But I'm a huge Dallas Cowboys fan, which I'm sure you probably remember. So I wanted to go to WrestleMania 32 in Dallas, but it didn't work out. But yeah, I mean, I think it's been a tough year with the pandemic, with no fans for wrestling. It's not quite as fun. I think a huge part of the business and the industry is built off of that crowd reaction, but yeah. I think they're only a couple weeks away. They're going on tour again, and I think Money in the Bank is in Texas, and they're going to have a full arena of fans. And then SummerSlam is in Las Vegas in August, and they're doing it in the new Legion Stadium where the Las Vegas Raiders play. And I think they'll probably have 60,000 or 70,000 people, which will be crazy. So yeah, I've been keeping tabs on it, but I'd say probably not as much as I used to a few years ago.
And yeah, so they're doing SummerSlam on a Saturday like this year for some reason. Not on a Sunday.
Yeah, I'm not totally sure what the reasoning is for that. And I think I remember hearing that Manny Pacquiao is also fighting on the Saturday night. He's boxing that same night. So it seems kind of interesting that they'll be going up against that. And, you know, the kind of the pay-per-view, the buy rate, like between wrestling and boxing, there's definitely a crossover, as in with UFC too, right, where you kind of have a group of people who do watch all three, but they have their own kind of dedicated fan bases. But yeah, something different. I mean, I think for as long as I can remember, the pay-per-views have always been on Sunday nights. So I guess they just want to try to kind of mix it up and do SummerSlam on a Saturday. There's a bunch of rumors, you know, kind of floating around if Brock Lesnar is going to show up at that. You know, there's talk of John Cena coming back for SummerSlam. Edge just kind of recently reappeared, and he's going to be, I think, fighting Roman Reigns at Money in the Bank. So from what I understand, because WrestleMania was kind of the first time in a year where they had any fans, right, where they did it in Tampa Bay at Raymond James,
yeah.
I think they want SummerSlam to be even bigger than WrestleMania for this year and to go all out to have a massive event.
Okay, so there are four big pay-per-views, or Mania, SummerSlam, Survivor Series, and Rumble. So they're trying to make it more one of those big four, right? So
yeah, those were kind of the anchors, those were the pillar pay-per-views back in the day, right? I mean, they've both been around for 30 plus years, and then they filled in kind of those other months with kind of the rotating ones, whether you have Money in the Bank or Hell in a Cell, or, you know, kind of there's been so many other different ones kind of through the years that they kind of move around. But for sure, SummerSlam, like you mentioned, Royal Rumble is always huge. That's something I would love to go to one day. I think it would be an absolute blast just to be just counting down every time somebody comes out would be really fun. But it's at a time of year, January is a little bit harder for me to get away with volleyball. But I'm actually going to be in Vegas in August, hopefully, fingers crossed, for my birthday. But I'm going to be missing SummerSlam by probably a week. So unfortunately, it would have been kind of cool to be there at the same time.
Yes, yes. Rumble's one of the ones like I would like to go to because to see the countdown with the Rumbles and stuff like that. It's one of my bucket list things to do, like go to all four big, like big ones. Well, not in the same year, but like scan them out where like near every have like 2-3 years in between each one. And so it should be fun.
Yeah, I think hopefully with that new stadium in Minneapolis, what they built for the football, it seems like that would be a great location to do a WrestleMania one day. You know, it'd be kind of cool if they could pull that off because it'd be nice and close to Winnipeg. But, you know, part of the fun is going to a city like that. Was as much as I enjoyed going to WrestleMania, I enjoyed probably going to New Orleans just as much. Like it was a 50-50 thing where we had a lot of fun that had nothing to do with wrestling as well and could kind of explore the city and see a bunch of different things. So I'm at this point where if it goes, I'd like it to be in a fun city, I guess. If I were to go back to another pay-per-view, I'd like it to be somewhere I haven't been before. I know when SummerSlam was in Toronto a couple years ago, I had a couple buddies who went and they really liked it. But it's so big now. The thing too is, I mean, they expand a lot of this stuff. Like WrestleMania is two nights, right? And then you got to go to the Raw on the Monday after, because that's usually always a lot of fun. And then there's the NXT TakeOver and the Hall of Fame and all these things. It's like you're really committing to a lot. And, you know, I still like wrestling. I still follow it. But it's a tough to go to that much wrestling in 4 or 5 days. It's, you're asking a lot. So
it's, there's always the group of guys, if you notice, in the front row. And there's that one guy who always wears a green shirt. And he's there.
Yeah.
And he's there every pay-per-view. He's like, man, this guy has problem money. Because I'm kind of thinking, if you buy these packages, is there like $5,000 or more? And like, man, this guy like probably has money.
Yeah, so he has been, it's been a few years now where he has been front and center, wearing the same green shirt, smiley face green shirt with the same hat.
Yeah.
And he gets it every single pay-per-view he's there. So I think it's at this point where, you know, he must have an in somewhere. Like, I don't know how you could always get the same seat every single time. But like you said, those packages are, when you're front row on the floor like that, you're paying big bucks. And if you're going to 12 pay-per-views a year, so one every month, and you're going every single year, I mean, he's probably spending 6 figures a year on going to wrestling pay-per-views. So I'm sure he's got some money. That's I don't think he's hurting for cash, that guy.
No, like in the past year he's saving money because he can't really go, and like, so now it's the next live pay-per-view's Money in the Bank, and it's in Texas, and I'm assuming he's front and center again, or tries to be front and center. And so
yeah, I think that's a safe bet. I think the next couple of weeks we will see the green shirt smiley face guy at the Money in the Bank.
And there's like, then you can tell that there's other guys there too, like beside him, like the regulars, right? So like, okay. So yeah, he stands out more because he has that green shirt and hat, like beige hat.
Yeah. Yeah, always wears the same thing. So I wonder if he has multiple of those shirts or if he just has the same one. My guess is he must have more than one, because he's always wearing the same.
I checked out his Twitter page and he said, yes, I have more than one green shirt.
Well, that's good. If he's paying $5,000 to sit front row, I'd hope that he buys himself a couple t-shirts.
I think he said he takes like multiple green shirts with him.
Okay, good call.
So guess, okay, again. Yeah, so because I think, guess he wears, if it's like WrestleMania and he goes all 3 days, like if it's day one, day two, Raw, he has like three different shirts. Because you don't want to
wear. Yeah, otherwise he probably could be getting a little bit, those shirts might start smelling a little bit funky, I think, if you just wear the same one every time. So
yeah.
Those are the long events to sit through.
And then, did you go to Raw when it was here last?
No, I did not go. There was something that came up the same night that I couldn't attend. But I did go to a couple of years ago. There was a house show here. But I didn't go to Raw though. No.
Yes. I went to Raw here in 2020. So that, yeah, a year ago. And then shortly after that's when the pandemic hit. And then I went to Raw in 2017, 2017, like Ron SmackDown 2017 in Toronto. They had the back-to-back nights. So.
Oh, nice.
And that we did that in Toronto. Like me and my brother went and did both nights.
You know what I did do? The last live wrestling that I saw was a good friend of mine and I. We went to Las Vegas for the first AEW Double or Nothing.
Yeah.
So that was kind of their debut pay-per-view back, I guess, May 2019 it was. And that was a lot of fun. We were third row on the floor. So we met Kenny Omega the day before the show and we got some great seats. And that was really cool just to be that close to the action for such a big event. And we met a ton of guys when we were out there with kind of this StarCast thing that they do there, which is kind of their, it's like an independent version of kind of the fan access, right, where you can get autographs and take pictures with the guys and kind of see some cool memorabilia and whatnot. But that was really fun. I'm glad that we did that. And anytime that you go to Las Vegas, it's never a bad weekend.
Yes. Hopefully one day AEW comes to Winnipeg. And they have a match between Jericho and Kenny Omega.
Yeah, so they fought twice, right? Both times, maybe each one won. So it would be pretty cool if they pulled off Alpha Omega 3, which was kind of the tagline of the first two, with them both being from Winnipeg and with Don Callis being from Winnipeg, who's involved at AEW as well. I think that would be a huge hit once, and I know they're starting to get back on the road. It might even be this week. They might have fans, because they've had fans in Jacksonville at Daly's Place, where they've been for the last year pretty much now, if not longer. But they've had limited amounts, but I think they're starting to go back on the road this month too. So things are slowly getting back to normal, and if you're a wrestling fan, that's good news, because it was tough without watching, without any fans.
If that happens, Jericho Omega, MTS Center. Who you cheer for? Good old St. James Boyd, Jericho or Transcona guy, Omega?
Well, I have a hard time cheering against Westwood Collegiate alumni Chris Jericho Donalds. You know, he's class of 88 or 89, I think, late 80s at Westwood, and grew up in Westwood. And he's got a pizza named after him at DJ's. You know, that's a great St. James spot. Nothing against Kenny Omega, but you gotta pull for a proud Westwood graduate in Chris Jericho.
That's the thing. Like, I'm 50-50 on that. I can go cheer him because he's from good old St. James, but I don't like him because he went to Westwood.
That's fair. Well, who's John Taylor's most famous alumni? You got Biff Naked, right? Didn't Biff Naked go to John Taylor?
Yes.
Yeah. Anybody else that I'm? Did I forget anybody else?
Nothing I can top of my head. I don't think.
No. Well, I was really hoping that Mark Stone and the Vegas Golden Knights would win the Stanley Cup, because he's also a Westwood Collegiate grad. Him and his brother Michael both went there. Obviously, you know, hockey players, you know, kind of tougher because they go play in the WHL and they miss a lot of time. But couldn't pull it off. But we'll see what happens. Tampa Bay looks like they might be a handful for Montreal. We'll see how that goes over the next 2 weeks or so.
Yeah, so I kind of hoping Price gets his Stanley Cup win. So he's a
kid. Yeah, he deserves it, I think. That would be great if he could get a Stanley Cup ring.
Yeah. Okay, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, no problem, Donald. It was fun. I'm glad we were able to connect. Thanks for asking me to come out, and I hope that you have a great rest of your summer.
You too. Have a great trip to BC.
Thanks. I'll post a couple pictures when we're out there, and you can see how tall all the guys are. You know, I look. They make me look short, but you'll see some good pictures of our training and stuff at UBC. And then we'll see. Maybe I'll push my birthday trip to Vegas back, and I'll try to go the same week as SummerSlam. We'll see what happens.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Donald.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Front Row Podcast. Download the show on iHeartRadio or wherever you listen to podcasts. Contact us on Twitter or Instagram at Podcast Front Row and join in the conversation. Catch us next time on the Front Row Podcast.